Yes, of course, that is the legend, Don William, talking about take me back home before I die. Yes, the time is 10 minutes past 11 o'clock, still morning, Sunday morning, and you are listening to Eagle FM Namibia, your favorite radio station, and it's a time for the rhythm of the historic, with me, David Shombe. Let us thank Meme Saima, and yeah, as it has always been the case, today, we are focusing on historical matters. We are going to dive deep in historical matters. However, it's also very important to make sure that the necessity of history to our current affairs, and how we can also use history to make sure that we make futuristic decisions which can assist us. And yeah, the content for today, we are going to look at where the world is in terms of geopolitics. We're going to give you some historical facts, and we're also going to discuss about the current happenings, how come we are where we are, particularly what is happening in terms of geopolitics, what's happening between Israel and Iran. And we have a good understanding that the U.S. has also entered the war last night. And yeah, maybe the question that we are asking ourselves is the world at the crossroad? Why can we say that the world is at the crossroad these days? Have it ever happened historically, like where it is today? And what are some of the motives for this happening, particularly to a layperson? What are some of the motives? Why do countries enter to war? What are some of the economic imperatives that, motivated these countries to enter into the war? What are some of the national interests that motivated these countries to enter into war? And we are going to do a comparative analysis to see, particularly between Iran and Israel, what is the future looking like? Who is going to be affected? How did this thing started? And what is the possibility of escalation of the war? And as an ordinary Namibia, what can we learn from history, and how can we strategically position ourselves when these things are happening? And it's for the first time a country like US enter directly, like one-on-one, with a smaller country for a very long time, because the last time US military engagement directly with a country is state to state is in the early 2000 when they attacked Iraq. However, for all those years, they've been entering war, giving technical assistance. And maybe what caused these countries to enter into those spaces, and many others eventualities also. And yeah, so while we are here, it's also very important to make sure that, when we are reading history is a very complex subject. It's a very complex subject, particularly when you talk about geopolitics. There's a lot of things involved, particularly one of the historian by the name Bot indicated that it's very, very difficult to find out the truth about the truth, because there are always different facts explained differently. And it's very difficult also to understand if we don't read between the lines, if we don't analyze, between the lines, and also if we also don't follow what motives do these historical figures or historical actors have in mind, and why people do things the way they do them. And yeah, and why Iran at this time, and what are some of the possibilities? And the question that we need to ask ourselves is also that there is a diversion in terms of international news, particularly when those things are happening at the same time.
Slow internet should be a headache of the past, yet many Namibians have connections that just aren't fast. We have a solution that might set you free. It's called Mobile LTE, and it comes with real speed. You'll enjoy up to 50 megabytes per second from just 300 Namibian dollars a month and free internet browsing after midnight till 6. When it comes to staying connected, this is it. Visit Paratus.Africa/Namibia or our branches nationwide and experience the thrill of better internet with Paratus by your side. Always
prepare, Paratus. No matter where you are, if you have a mobile device, you can tune into Namibia's number one talk radio station by downloading the Eagle FM app on the Google Play Store or on the Apple App Store. Download the Eagle FM app to tune into live Eagle FM programming or to listen to podcasts of previous broadcasts. Eagle FM, Namibia's number one talk radio station.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I am planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Eagle FM, let's see.
Yes, we are continuing with the Rim of the Historic. We are going to look at the current happening, particularly where the world is standing in terms of the war between Israel and Iran. And we have just received news that last night, the American Air Force has entered the war, and they have attacked key nuclear sites in Iran. They attack key nuclear site in Iran. And also, some of these nuclear sites have been very impenetrable by the Israel force, like the main one, which is known as Fordo Fuel Enrichment Plant, which has been, located deep inside the mountains, underground, and also Natal, and also some nuclear facilities in Haifan. Now, the question that we need to ask ourselves is that, why Iran? Why this time? And what could be some of the motivation? When you go back to the history of Iran, you'll be able to understand that for a very long time, the United States had influence in Iran politics. They have influence in Iran politics. And until 1979, when Iran Revolution happened, then a man by the name Ruhollah Khomeini, the first Ayatollah, which is the supreme leader, Ruhollah Khomeini, the supreme leader of the former supreme leader of Iran, established Iran Islamic State, and also made sure that the political structure of Iran should be ruled by religion. Because if you go on Google, if you read books now, you'll be able to understand that it's called Islamic State of Iran, where he made sure that the system that he operated is I do not want to say is directly opposing democratic system. It's a structure which made sure that the highest form of authority in Iran is a supreme leader, cannot be questioned, and must be, and has to be, a religious person. Now, you'll be able also to see that if you look at the structure of Iranian political system, they have a president, they have ministers, they have diplomats, foreign affairs ministers, and the whole structure, However, if you start reading and also understanding how Iran's system is been working, they also have the assembly of experts, but these people are on top of political, you can say the technocrats and governance authority. You have the assembly of the experts who give advice to the last man standing, that is Ayatollah. Now, when this guy came to power in 1979, after spending many years in exile, he reestablished the Iranian system, and also made sure that he built alliance in the region, and also alliance with the Eastern world. Now you now be able to understand that when these people, when Iranian system is being restructured, there is no liberalism ideas anymore. They move away from the Western world and they start to make sure that the Islamic law must be made a national law. Must be made a national law. All women must start wearing hijab. Men must be advised to grow beards. And also those with liberalism ideas. I don't want to say they were prosecuted, but they were trying to be transformed. That the system was transformed by that that man by the name Luhola, Ayatollah Luhola Khomeini, and a very powerful man by then. And now, when these things are happening, ask yourself this. Where was the US? Where was Israel? Where was the world when these things are happening? Imagine somebody just come from exile, remove your ally, and make sure that everything that you impose on his people were degraded or were downgraded. And interestingly, what Iran did so quiet, and I think what made them very powerful is that they made sure that their ideas, their Islamic ideologies, have been imposed, and everybody who is given those key strategic positions, either it's a minister of foreign affairs, either it's a president, either it's an advisor, that person must share the common ideologies. That's why it was so difficult to penetrate even Western or European, ideologies. It was very difficult for them to penetrate the Iranian system. That's why they have created what is called the Revolutionary Guard. Because what is very interesting is that when you go to Iran, it's like, let me say you are in Namibia, where you have a defense force, you have police, but you also have a force which is only responsible to protect the state. Now, in Iran, that is called Islamic Revolutionary Guard. It's a special wing of Iranian, military. It's a special wing and well trained, which have all the necessary equipment. Either it's Air Force, it's a Navy, ground force, and also other technical parts. And what is very interesting is that these people that are in this Islamic Revolutionary Guard force have been so powerful to that extent that they threaten the interest of the US and the interest of the Israelis in the region that is the Middle East. That's why this conflict that we are seeing between Israel and Iran did not just start yesterday. These are things that are rooted in the historical records of the world. Because if you are asking yourself, you have You have those, I don't want to say Christians who don't read history. If you look, if you go back to history, then you try to understand where Israel is now. Is that the Israel that you've been reading from the Bible? Just go and ask yourself those questions. Or it's a state which was formed from, it was a state which was formed just to accommodate people who were running away from war. Because if you read the history of Israel post World War II, you'll be able to understand that all that part was occupied by Arabs or the Palestinians. But post 1945, when the Jews were persecuted or persecuted by Nazi, and you understand the historical, you know, facts of the Jews, almost 6 million killed by the Nazis. There was now a proposal to say, where are we going to take these people for them to establish themselves? Where are we going to take them? And a lot of, you know, geographical regions were pointed out until to the point where Israel is put where it is now. Because if you want to get it right, just make a comparative analysis between what you read, how it has come about, and compare also that with the history of the Second World War. And in this case, you also be able to understand that why do you think the Israel and the Palestine are fighting? Those are some of the questions that you need to ask yourself, but those are the questions for another day. But for now, let us go to a commercial break. Then from there, we are going to continue until we come to the point of what is happening right now, what will happen tomorrow in the next hour, what happened to the Iranian forces, what is the Supreme Leader saying after the US, you know, intervene, what is Russia saying, what is Iranian allies are saying. What is Russia saying? What is China saying? What is North Korean saying? And what are some of the allies within the Middle East are saying? And was it right? Although in terms of geopolitics, there is not really something that you can say is right unless you want to be on one side, because people are fighting for their own interest. And interest matters to countries in geopolitics. So there are some of the questions that you need to ask yourself. And you also need to look at what is happening within the American politics. What is happening within the American politics? What is needed for an American president to declare war? Who has power? And what are the military experts are saying about intervention of this? And also what is very interesting is also that, you also need to ask yourself these questions to say, when you look at an institution which is responsible for doing research and also studying the capacity of countries to come up with nuclear weapons, look at their reports. What are they saying? Look at the report of the U.S. Director of National Intelligence. Look at why they are fighting with the president. And look at the possibility of this war to escalate to the region. Or maybe it will become the Third World War, which everybody do not want. And how are these things going to affect our economy? Because for you to understand the whole operation of how the world system is working, don't take yourself out of the picture. Don't take yourself out of the picture. Because if you don't take yourself out of the picture, you will be able also to understand very well, to say, how are these things that we talk about going to impact ourselves? How are they going to impact our lives? And how can, as a country, position ourselves when these things are happening? And yeah, so let's go to a commercial break. Then from there,
Titanium, the perfect fit between platinum and silver, complementing our existing benefit options. We always offer a comprehensive healthcare experience. NHP, the premier member-centric medical aid fund. Visit NHP today at nhp.com.na. NHP, we're about you.
Placed gold on my finger. You brought love like I've never known. You gave life to our children and to me a reason to go on. You're my bread when I'm hungry. You're my shelter from troubled winds. You're my anchor in life's ocean. But most of all, you're my best friend. I need hope and inspiration. You're always strong when I'm tired and weak. I could search this whole world over. You'd still be everything that I need. You're my bread when I'm hungry. You're my shelter from troubled winds. You're my anchor in life's ocean. But most of all, you're my best friend. You're my bread when I'm hungry. You're my shelter from troubled winds. You're my anchor in life's ocean. But most of all, you're my best friend. This day like all the rest. First thing every morning that I do is start missing you. Some broken hearts never mend. Some memories never end. Some tears will never dry. My love for you will never die. Rendezvous in the night. Willing woman to hold me tight. But in the middle of love's embrace, I see your face. Some broken hearts never mend. Some memories never end. Some tears will never cry. Die.
to die.
Yes, let's continue with the rhythm of the historic. Yeah, with me, David Shombe. We are here until the hour of 1 o'clock. And we are looking at the situation in the Middle East. And we are also looking at the possibilities. What could have happened? What will happen? What are some of the things that we need to put in mind? And are we going to have Iran as a state, as a standing and functional state in the next 1 year, or is going to be another Libya, is going to be another Iraq, or is going to be another Afghanistan? Or who is going to survive between Iran and Israel? And what does this mean to the world? And who is going to lose? Yeah, now, just before we come to what have happened on the 13th of June, 2025, when Israel attacked Iran and killed some of the key, you know, strategical military influencer or military chiefs. We need to look at Iran before 1990. We need to look at Iran before 1990. As we have been saying, or as we spoke about the man who took over, who revolutionized Iran. That, of course, is Khomeini, or Ayatollah Ruhollah Khomeini, not the current Ali, not the current Ayatollah Ali Khomeini. He's a first gentleman who brought, or who put Iran together as it is now, who also had very strict rules that he shaped, because if you look at, Iran post 1979, when the Shah was overthrown, who was a leader who was working together with the West. They changed the dressing codes of women. By that time, Iran was looked as a new liberal Middle East country, and it was starting to move to the West. But post 1979. When Ayatollah, the man himself, came to power, he imposed, or he made sure that he transformed his country by coming up with strict rules, which are more attached to the religion. And some of these things that we need to look at is that the first thing that he advocated for is rule by Islamic jurists. That's the first law that he put in place to make sure that those who are going to be in power, they must be preachers or expert in Islam, must be expert in religious, and must also make sure that they hold absolute power to make decision, because he has an understanding that these guys who are leading are chosen by God. And the other thing that he also put in place is Sharia law to be part or the basic form of governance. All the laws that are operational in Iran, they must be, or must be deriving from Islam law, so that they can establish a society which is governed by religion. That is what is happening in Iran. And the other thing that he also put in place is what we call Islamization of the state. Which, because what I have indicated is that when you go to any book that you read, Iran post 1979, it became Islamic Republic. And the other thing also that the rules that he post is opposition of the Western influence. All these things of liberalism, all these things of I know my rights, all these things of, you know, coming up with the third gender, they are not tolerated in Iran. They are not tolerated in Iran. Why? Because those are some of the standing rules that non-negotiable were put in place by men by the name Ruhollah Ayatollah Khomeini and his people. And he made sure that he established a special army to protect the state. That is called the Islamic Revolutionary Guard. You have the military. Yes, the military is there, operating, the police is there, but you have the Islamic Revolutionary Guard. And it is everything that a standing defense force has. Because that is the last line of defense to protect the interests of the Islam. That's why when people brought these protests of, you know, Western protest, when people brought this, you know, demonstration to say we want reform, we want democracy, we want, you know, the leader to be elected and all those things in Iran, they sent the Islamic Revolutionary Guard to make sure that they disperse those demonstrators and also to make sure that the state remains standing. Whatever happened, the state remains standing. That's why the structure of Iran governance is very complicated to that extent that you don't know who holds power. Because you have the president, you have Minister of Foreign Affairs, you have assembly of experts. Then on top of that, there is another assembly of advisors. Then you have Ayatollah Khomeini, who is a final say. And whatever he said is a law. That is the supreme leader. And imagine you are operating like that. You have oil. Uranium, and you are a population of 100 million people. A population of 100 million people. Then you join BRICS. Then you have allies like Russia, North Korea, and China. Then you also have proxies or some of the militant groups which are supporting you across the Middle East. So, and you also have high level of technology. And what you need to understand is that Iran is one of the countries in the Middle East which has experts, the technology that is led the Western world to ask, how are these guys operating? They are operating at the size level of, you know, the high level of technology that also makes sure that they equip their military capabilities, and it has been a threat to the Israel government, because when Israel state was established, it was an established state to put people who were running away from war. When Israel was established, the Arab world was not happy. The Arab world was not happy with that. The Arab world was not happy with that, and even when you look at the way Israel government have been treating people of Palestine, the Arab world was not happy with that. That's why they describe Israel as an intruder. That's why for Israel to be there standing now, it's only because of the Americans. It's only because US made sure that Israel is the only, few allies that they have in the Middle East. And that is what keep the interest of the Middle East, the interest of the Americans in the Middle East, standing for a very long time. Because if you read and you also, listen to the speech of, former American president, you look at Clinton, you look at, Bush, senior and junior, you look at Obama, you look at, because whatever the change in American politics, the foreign policy of American politics is always standing. The foreign policy of America is always standing. That's why all these presidents are always telling you to say, Israel is our greatest ally in the region. That is the main interest of the American people. That's why when Netanyahu was given a warrant of arrest by International Criminal Court, the U.S. never bothered. Even went to America to meet Donald Trump. But when Putin is also given a warrant of arrest by International Court, it's a different thing. Yeah, but you need to understand that in the world of geopolitics, interests always matter. In the world of geopolitics, in the world of global politics, countries align themselves with who they can benefit from, with who they can benefit from. Because if you look at how much is spent per day in this war, then you look at what this country could have used to assist poor countries, like when we are crying of poverty in Africa and other countries. Then you start wondering to say, who are our main friends? Who are our main friends, and why are people spending a lot of money in this war? Now, let's look at fast forward 2011, when there was it's not the wind of change to say, when most of the, it's called Arab Springs, when young people, adults, stood up across different, Arab world, asking for the reforms of their government. There were protests in Egypt, protests in Syria, protests in Libya, and a lot of government were thrown away, were overthrown. We see what have happened in Libya, and we are seeing where Libya is now, because there's no state there. It's only the men with a gun who rule. It's only those with powerful guns who can rule the part of Libya. Then you look at what have happened after that. What have happened after that is that the world have never been where it is right now, if not how it was during the World War II. Because just a matter of seconds, if you look at how history is, just a matter of seconds, just a matter of minutes and hours, no more days, where we can see powerful and strong militaries engaging each other directly to defend their friends. Now, what happened is on the 13th of June, 2025. You know, I do not want to say Israel have been paranoid, but it could be that they are seeing something that the world is also not seeing, because the technology of Iran is high level, is complicated, and it's very difficult also to understand from the external world. Now, Netanyahu is called Bibi. He's a political magician. He's been called for a long time. He was a military guy before he entered politics. Since 1990s, he has been just calling to say, no, there is a threat to our country, who is Iran. Go and look at his speech. Say, no, Iran is only a matter of days. Iran is going to produce a nuclear bomb. And what does it mean if Iran create a nuclear bomb? If they have, which nobody knows, Israel will never be safe. Because you can already see that all the neighbors of Israel, they are not friends. Look at, they are not friends. Because if you look at the map of the Middle East, we'll be able to understand that if you look at Lebanon, you look at Syria, you look at where Israel is, you look at Iran, then you'll be able also to understand that Israel is not safe. And interestingly, if you are looking at numbers, and military capacity, Iran produces their own weapon. Yes, indeed, they are buying from the East. But the population of Iran is beyond 90 million. The population of Israel is not more than 10 million. That's one thing that you need to know. Then you look at human capacity. Iran has advantage in terms of human capital. And it has advantage also in terms of, technological know-how. However, Israel has a military advantage. Has military advantage due to allies such as the United States and also NATO. However, NATO did not really explain themselves. They are a bit not really showing up on the course. Now, what happened on the 13th of June through the intelligence gathering by Mossad, which is Israel intelligence. Israel intelligence service, and it has been described as one of the most sophisticated intelligence service in the world, and it has been doing all the research, intelligence gathering, and they bombed various facilities, military facilities, in Iran. They killed second in charge commanders of Islamic Revolutionary Guard, the advisor of Islamic Revolutionary Guards. They killed the head of Islamic Revolutionary Guard intelligence, and that was the beginning of the war. And what is very interesting is that one thing about the Arabs is that war fighting, particularly when they are at the home ground, is what they do best. Fighting is what they do best, and with them, even the kid is being born in the Middle East, they know how to draw a gun on the floor. They know, because fighting is in their blood. Because these guys, they fight, and they made sure that they integrate their faith and religion to that war. That's why it's very difficult for them to surrender. And then Arab is not. And we were talking with Tate France one day here to say, telling an Arab to surrender is one of the most impossible thing. It's one of the most impossible thing that you can ever do. Because war is, to them, defending themselves is what they do best. That's why before we go to what happened in Iran, that's why it's also very interesting to look at what happened in Afghanistan. Afghanistan is described in history as the graveyard of all the empires. The British, they went there, they got defeated, they left their equipment. The Russians, they went there, is the same thing. The US, they went there, they took almost 20 years being in Afghanistan. And when they left, we have seen on the news, go and watch YouTube videos how the military, US military were leaving their equipment in Afghanistan when Taliban was coming back home. You'll be able now, because when you look at that, you'll be able to understand that you can have technical know-how, you can have military power, but these guys who are working on foot, these guys are motivated by their religion, and they are also motivated by the home ground. And that's why now what happened is that, Israel underestimated the power of retaliation. Underestimated the power of retaliation from Iran, because Israel is one of the countries which has a sophisticated air defense system. Very sophisticated air defense system that was known as not penetratable. Yeah, because it has different layers of defense. You can shoot down short range missiles, shoot down middle, medium range missiles, long range missiles. They have different layers of defense system. And the last one is an Iron Dome. They have David String, they have another one, could not remember. Then you have the Iron Dome, what is happening that the defense system is not a net. Defense system is what is when you are receiving an attack, particularly from air. You have rockets that you are launching to shoot down all those, you know, missiles that have been launched against you. That is what has been happening since the 13th of June. I think the first response after Iran was attacked, we have seen how the world media was presenting to say, no, I think Iran, it's time for Iran to surrender. And even the U.S. president said, you guys, I told you to come on the negotiation table, because they were negotiating about Iran to stop enriching the uranium. And for those of you who understand science, you'll be able to know that when you are enriching uranium, you are developing a capacity that could be used for creation of weapons of mass destruction, such as atomic bombs and others. Now, what happened is that Iran have been waiting for this thing, because they have capacity. Even American people, they have agreed to say Iran has arsenals of long range, short range rockets and ballistic missiles. It's one of the most armed countries in the Middle East. Because with them, they have scientists. They even have scientists from the Russians, North Koreans. They have technical know-how and technical capabilities. That's why when they are releasing their retaliation, when they are revenging or they are fighting back, shoot 100 missiles per day. 100 missiles per day. And remember, Hermut used to say, you know, war is a very expensive business, which is indeed true. 100 missiles per day. Then these 100 missiles per day, they must be met with 100 missiles again from the Israelis to shoot them down. And what is very interesting is that when you shoot 100 missiles, doesn't mean that they are only going to have impact on 100 areas if these missiles have managed to launch to land where to their targets. These missiles, they have different warheads. By the time it reaches its targets, it can hit 5 different different locations. That's why it's so crucial to make sure that when you have an air defense system, it has to shoot them down before they land. Now, the first launch was not impactful. The first launch was not impactful, and 95% of these missiles were shot down, and Israel was boasting about their air defense capabilities, and also just a matter of time for them to destroy or to do this thing, what we call a regime change in Iran. Now, days by days, Iran is sending 100 missiles, different types of drones, hypersonic, until to the point where the Iron Dome, or what is called the impenetrable defense system in the Middle East, was very tired, and missiles were landing in Israel, and we have seen people are running to the safe house. Now it also starts to be a concerning issue to the U.S. military to say, our people are going under fire, until they start also assisting shooting them down. But what is also what we need to look at is also that why are these things happening? Because history taught us to say allies met us, because these are friends that we can have. But when they are attacked, there is a possibility for you to get involved, either diplomatically or militarily. Now, the retaliation has been continuing, is still continuing from the Iran. Israel has a capability of air force, and there have been a lot of reports about F-35 jet fighters being shot down by the Iranian authorities. pilots being captured. But some of this information are not really coming out because it depends on who has the information and who is denying. Because when you look at F-35, which is a fifth generation jet fighter, which is known to be undetectable and high level technology that can, that was really never used in war, but these things were given to the Israel army. And what is also very interesting is that that is one of the highly sophisticated fighter jet that giving Iran a very difficult time. That's giving Iran a very difficult, time. Now, before we go to what happened last night, what is the possibility? Are we going to have a third world war? Is going to end like this? How did Iran respond? And how can we position ourselves? And it's also very important also to look at the economy of war, because war is like the fight that you create at the bar. You know, a fight that you create at the bar can cost you a lot of money. It depends on the impact, depends on who you are fighting with. It can also cost you life. And when it costs you life, that is the cost of fighting. Yeah, because in any fight, there is no really winner. Because you are going to lose either economically, or you are going to lose militarily. Because if you look at firing of 100 ballistic missiles every day, intercepting them with another 100, not maybe more than that, because there is also a possibility for you to miss and guess more than that. And in terms of the Israel economy, it was indicated that in every air defense rocket launch is 500,000 US dollars, half a million US dollars, every rocket that you are firing. Imagine how many rockets you have fired. And it's not only that. You also talk about the military capabilities that you have used. And you also talk about the buildings that are destroyed. And the war is estimated to have cost already around 4 billion US dollars from the Israel side, and from the Iranian, I think it's around 1 billion there. And what is very interesting is that Prime Minister Netanyahu is also trying to add to that budget, because something that you have started and you have to finish it. So now we are going to look at the possibility of the escalation to the region, the possibility of China to enter the war, maybe North Korea, maybe Russia, or maybe not, or maybe it's going to be the beginning of diplomacy. Or we are also going to look at how affected Iran is, how vulnerable it is, and what is its competitive advantage in this, and is Israel going to see peace? What is going to happen in Palestine, and what is the future of Netanyahu? And it's a very interesting time to be alive. It's a very interesting time to be alive, and it's very interesting to look at these happenings from it's happening from different angles. So let's go to a commercial break. You can come.
Got me, we got something everybody else can see. Me, I got you, we got a good thing, honey, you know we do. Friends, they all know, 'cause we can't help but let it show. Can't hide, we got something just too good to hold inside. We don't need no money, honey, you and I. What we've got together, money just can't buy what we've got.
I got you, you got me, we got love.
Down the hallway to his doom, I stood up to say goodbye like all the rest. And I heard him tell the warden just before he reached my cell, let my guitar playing friend do my request. Let him sing me back home with a song I used to hear. Make my old memories come alive. Take me away and turn back the years. Sing me back home. I recall last Sunday morning, a choir from off the street came to sing a few old gospel songs. And I heard him tell the singers, there's a song my mama sang. Could I hear it once before you move along? Sing me back home the song I used to hear. Make my old memories come alive. Take me away and turn back to you.
Yes, we are continuing with the rim of the historic. We are looking at what is happening in the Middle East. What is happening in the Middle East. And it was indicated that the US government have entered the war directly, attacking Iran nuclear facility sites. And what is very interesting is also that the Americans or the US government realized to say Israel, no matter how much you are equipping Israel, Israel will not have a capacity to will not have a capacity to destroy nuclear sites of Iran, because what this what these guys did is that Iran is so strategic, and the way they build their facility, because of their home ground, is deep underground and also under the mountain. And Netanyahu, being a military leader, he went to the U.S. and asked for one of the bombs. They called it a Backbuster or B2 Bomber or Backbuster. They call that bomb a Backbuster. And that Backbuster, it's not an atomic bomb. It's a bomb that can go beyond 30 meters down the ground, can penetrate any ground, according to military analysts. It can go beyond 30 meters and it can explode inside after it has penetrated the ground. Because the aim of Israel to ask this is, they realize to say, no matter how good they are at fighting, this war will not end. Because one of the most sophisticated nuclear site that was known and that was feared is called Fordo. That is one of the nuclear site which was bombed. And we have seen the response of, it's called Fordo Fuel Enrichment Plant. And this is underground. It's not about 20 meters underground. It's not about 40 meters underground. It's underground in the mountains. And, the Iranian government have confirmed that, yes, the US military involved. They bombed 3 of their nuclear sites. And they are going to respond accordingly. Now, the question that you need to ask yourself is that Iran may be very powerful in terms of the military capacity in the Middle East, but it's not equivalent to the U.S. Army in terms of sophistication of technology and all those things. But they said that the war now is declared to American sites, Americans' military assets in the region, and even beyond. Now, that statement, one thing that we need to know is that when the Arabs are saying they are going to respond, they are going to respond. Then the question that you're asking yourself is that, why is China when all these things are happening? Where is China when all these things are happening? Where is North Korea? Where is Russia? And what is the cost of war? Because Donald Trump was at a very difficult position because he is known to be a man of action. And last week he was at a very difficult position where there was a division within his security advisors. There was a division between his security advisor where one team is saying you should not enter the war, where the other team is also saying you must protect our greatest ally in the region, that is Israel. And we have seen that let's go to a commercial break, then we can come back.
No matter where you are, if you have a mobile device, you can tune into Namibia's number one talk radio station by downloading the Eagle FM app on the Google Play Store or on the Apple App Store. Download the Eagle FM app to tune into live Eagle FM programming or to listen to podcasts of previous broadcasts. Eagle FM, Namibia's number one talk radio station.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, and I don't know how to best...
Yes, we are continuing with the Rim of the Historic with me, David Shombe. We are here until the hour of 1 o'clock. And today we are looking at what's happening in the Middle East. We are looking at the possibility of escalation of the war between Israel and Iran. We have good understanding that when the president of U.S. declared that U.S. has involved in the Iran military you know, they engaged with Iran military sites. They bombed three Iran nuclear sites. And this came even when the national director of national intelligence of US, Tulsi Gabbard, has disagreed with Donald Trump on technical part of the issues, to say they got intelligence report that confirmed that Iran is not building, you know, nuclear bomb, or is not building nuclear weapons. And Donald Trump continued to proceed with his action. Now, and he indicated that after that bombing, he indicated that no, it's now the end of the war, and peace must come. That is what he said. He said peace must come. Now the question that you're asking yourself is that when Iran is saying it's going to reply, how are they going to reply? Because you have U.S. military assets around the Middle East. How are they going to reply? Are they going to reply with their allies, or are they going to reply directly? What capacity do they have so that they can reply to the U.S. Military? And what will happen when they reply to the U.S. military assets in that region? And this will be the first one-on-one, state-to-state military engagement after with the U.S. to say after the invasion of Iraq directly. It's going to be very interesting also to say where is China standing, because China, they condemn Israel attack on the 13th of June. The Russia, they called for diplomacy. North Korea, they declared, that it's inappropriate for Israel to attack Iran. Now, what you also need to look at is that, Iran, economic wise, when you look at, the economy of Iran is about $1 trillion, or more than $1 trillion, you know, US, $1 trillion US dollars. And they trade with China. They trade with Russia. Trade with Turkey. And, BRICS region. What is interesting is that last year, Iran and many other states, they joined BRICS, this one economic bloc. And Iran is only one of the few countries which are standing on their own. Economic-wise, they are standing on their own. They don't trade with the Western. They are trading either in the Middle East or with the Eastern part. Talk about Russia, talk about North Korea, we talk about China and many other countries. And just before we go directly to the conversation, you also need to understand that Iran has been also one of our trading partner, Namibia, in terms of uranium, until to a certain point. Those are some of the things that you need to look at, and what will happen, because the world is at a crossroad, and it require somebody who don't only understand the military, but somebody who understand diplomacy also to end this war. Because Americans or the US have power to destroy. That one is undeniable, but they also have power for diplomacy. Because if they say they want that war to end tomorrow, it would end. But not with, motives and also pronunciation, because it's very interesting to look at pronunciation. It's also very interesting also to analyze speeches of war. What is the motive? The motive of Israel to attack Iran was that Iran was building a nuclear bomb or was about to build a nuclear bomb, and that is a threat to Israel because the leader of Iran declared that Israel was supposed to be erased from the face of earth because it's an intruder in the region. It's Jews surrounded by the Arabs. That is the motive of the war. Now, the motive of Israel to attack again is to destroy key military infrastructure which are destroying or which are busy building and upgrading technological know-how on how to attack Israel. That was their motive. Now, Iran is fighting back on retaliation. Now, what is so very interesting is that after the war have started, then USA say no, the supreme leader and the Iranian must surrender. How do you surrender if somebody come and attack you at your home? How do you surrender if somebody provoked you, you defend yourself, then they say you must surrender. Those are some of the questions that we need to ask ourselves to say, what is the motive? Then just other than that, then there is also the call for regime change. The Prime Minister of Israel is saying Iranian people must demand what they want. Because remember, a regime change is a very interesting concept, because when somebody wants chaos within your country, you cannot come from outside and change the country. They want to influence the people of Israel to make sure that, the people of Iran to make sure that it's them who demand the regime change, because where there is chaos, there's opportunities for those who do not have, there's opportunity for those who want their interests to be pursued. So those are some of the things that we need to look at. And everyone is awake. When you look at the media is awake the whole night, particularly listening, what is the next news? Is China going to send jet fighters, or they are going to assist them, or they are going to leave? Or Iran now is going to sit on the table and start discussing with Israel how the war is going to end. And you also need to understand who is making money from this, because war is part of the economy. War is part of the economy. It's an unprecedented activity which affects the global economy. It's unprecedented activity which affects the global economy. However, it also creates opportunities for the opportunist and also for a business person, because a business guy, particularly that who is attached to machines, military consultancy, setting of weapons, will never go wrong in those business, because any rocket which is fired is an opportunity for somebody who produced that rocket to make money. Because Iran will be forced to buy for reinforcement, Israel will be forced to buy for reinforcement, and you have those military companies which are making money. They've been making money. Then you have all those, they're called private assets, but they're actually mercenaries, like security companies who are willing to go to war for money. Now you're asking yourself to say, in this current 21st century, with highly advanced technology, how are these things going to turn out? Because people are no more fighting with AK-47. Because if you are 200 kilometers away from me with an AK-47, you are already erased by a drone. People are fighting with computers. It's a war of the advanced. It's not like what's happening in Africa, where people are still running with AK-47, one-on-one conventional war. People are fighting with higher technological capacity. So how are things going to turn? And what role do we have to play in this? Because at the end of the day, it's our world. And I have a lot of questions, especially to the climate activist. Especially to the climate activist who contradict themselves particularly you can find climate activists in the US, climate activists in Israel, climate activists in France. What are you doing to the environment with all these ballistics? Are we still going to stand on the Paris Agreement, or other things are going to follow suit? What is the agenda of climate change? Why are people fighting for their own interest? Yeah, because that is also one of the things that we need to look at. One of the things that we need to look at. People who are advocating for green energy. Look at those leaders who are attending those COP summits. And look at what they do now. Are they not the ones who are contributing to the world pollution? And this thing of these days, this war of these days is, because the world become a global village, people are using highly sophisticated weapons. Anything can happen. Diseases can erupt. Earthquakes. Change in weather conditions. And, many other things. And remember, war give birth to a lot of unaccepted or undesirable factors, such as poverty, such as refugees moving around. The developed countries which have stable economies, like the United Arab Emirates, Qatar, Jordan, the Saudis, how are they going to cope with the influx of refugees and disorders from all over? And how are the people of Israel going to live in the Arab world post-Iran conflicts? How is it going to end? And who is going to end it? And who is Iran going to cry to? Because I understand communication have been already given to say, when you are at war, those Arabs, they look ahead. And Israel also look ahead. They also look ahead to say, what will happen next? Because on top of that, there is also something that we need to look at, especially when you are listening to news, listening to the information like this. It's always very important to make sure that you go and verify your facts. It's also very important to make sure that you go and read your history books, compare the facts, because in every war, there is what we call the psychology of war or psychological warfare. Psychological warfare is a war of information where manipulation, intimidation, boasting, and also information given to people so that they can doubt themselves, so that they can also surrender, going to be given, because that is a psychological warfare. It's a war, because war has different areas. It can be one-on-one conventional war. You have war information, you have cyber attack, you have the war within intelligence community, and the war of information is very complicated, because people drive narratives. People drive narratives. It's now up to you to, yes, you can choose side. You can say you are standing with Palestine, you are standing with Israel, or you are standing with the US, or you are standing with Iran. But how are you getting your information? How are you analyzing your information? What is the contradictory statements being given by all these leaders, whether it's from Iran, whether it's from Israel, whether it's from the US, Palestine, Russia, and China? It's up to you to analyze, because information is not only about what you get, it's also how you analyze them and how you use them. And yeah, you are listening to The Rim of the Historic with me, David Shombe. Today we are looking at what could happen, what are the possibilities of regional war, how is the situation of the US intervention in Iran going to be handled, and how is Iran going to respond? Is the Israel safe now, or there is going to be another retaliation? And who is benefiting from this war? And the questions also that we need to ask ourselves is that in every war, there is casualties of war. And those casualties of war are not the people who directly have influence in that war. You talk about pregnant women, you talk about the old, you talk about children, you talk about the students, not the men with guns. Talk about women and children. How are they going to survive? And what is the situation in Israel? How are the people going to survive? And is this how peace is created? There's a lot of questions we need to ask ourselves also that, again today also, when after the bombardment of U.S. military Air Force 2 to the Iranian nuclear sites, you know, the UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres still condemned the actions and called for de-escalation. Now, why do people go to UN if UN does not have capacity? So UN is only US and Russia. Why people, why the SG is like just a public relations officer? You are just communicating and nothing will happen. Why are you condemning? What is the UN Charter saying about provocation or intervention or what? Or invading a foreign state? What is the UN saying about that? Is there anything going to come from the UN or we are doomed? So, dear listeners, we have around 28 minutes before we come to the end of our program. You can still communicate with us. Give your contribution, give your clarification, give your addition at 083-288-401. You can engage us in the studio, then you can contribute to the Rim of the Historic. And yeah.
Sing me back home before I die. Sing me back home the song I used to hear. Make my old memories come alive. Take me away and turn back the years. Sing me back home.
Children and to me a reason to go on. You're my bread when I'm hungry. You're my shelter from troubled winds. You're my anchor in life's ocean, but most of all, you're my best friend.
when I need hope and inspiration. You're always strong when I'm tired and weak. I could search this whole world over, you'd still be everything that I need. You're my bread when I'm hungry. You're my shelter from troubled winds. You're my anchor in life's ocean. But most of all, you're my best friend. You're my bread when I'm hungry. You're my shelter from troubled winds. You're my anchor in life's ocean. But most of all, you're my best friend. This day, like all the rest. First thing every morning that I do is start missing you. Some broken hearts never mend, some memories never end, some tears will never dry. My love for you will never die. Rendezvous in the night, willing woman to hold me tight. But in the middle of love's embrace, I see your face. Some broken hearts never mend, some memories never end, some tears will never dry. Die. Some broken hearts never mend, some memories never end, some tears will never dry. My love for you will never die.
Yes, let's take the caller.
Hello, good afternoon.
Afternoon, how are you?
I'm good, how are you?
Good, good.
Yes.
Oh, is it time for us to contribute?
Come again?
Is it time for us to contribute?
Indeed, indeed, you can contribute.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's interesting the fact that you're giving us.
Okay.
Regarding the whole situation surrounding Iran and Iran and Israel.
Yeah.
From where the enmity started and where we are right now.
Yeah.
I think when you look back, way back, the whole Middle East situation, the West was always as interested in it, in the Middle East.
Yeah.
Because if you look at the first Shah, he was well supported by the British. Because we understand that during the First World War, France and England divided the Middle East among themselves in Block A and Block B, of which England had they had Iraq. Iraq was one of their country that they had under them.
Yeah,
that was now before they fully took over Israel.
Yeah,
we understand Jordan as well. So they had their interest in that particular region. So the first Shah was well supported by the British until he supported the Nazis and he was removed. But then his son took over, Mohammed Reza Shah, whom they fully supported. But why were they there in the first place? Because we understand that the Anglo-Iran oil company that was removing oil in Iran would keep the profit from that particular particular oil site.
It's an economic interest first.
So there was economical interest in the, as far as that is concerned. Just the same as when they used the family that used to rule Saudi Arabia before the Saudi took over. The father of because they used the father of the king of Jordan. Who did they call? Because they use the gentleman that who took over after in Jordan.
Yeah.
Well, who do they say?
So that is the Saudi.
Saudis.
Yeah.
It was the family that the Saudis removed, and then the Saudi took over. That's why, because that time that area was called Arabia only. When the Saud family took over, then they changed it to Saud Arabia, which you call today Saudi Arabia.
No, we are together, the Saudi house.
Yeah, exactly, the Saudi house, yeah. And then we remember that this particular family, that's what they used to move up the Ottoman Empire, and then they gave one of the son Jordan, because what he wanted in the first place, it's not Jordan that he wanted, but he wanted Lebanon. But they said, no, you can't have Lebanon, so they gave him Jordan. And the other brother, Faisal, they gave Faisal Iraq.
So it was just powerful people give their family regions.
But they were given by the British, because they are not originally from that country. Yeah.
So
at the end of the day, connecting it now to the whole Iran issue, the West has always wanted to manipulate that particular continent as far as they always had interest as far as economic power is concerned. Because if you look at Jordan today, there's not much going on about Jordan. Because why? Because there isn't very much mineral in Jordan. Otherwise, they were actually going to invade Jordan right now. But because of their own interest that they have in that particular region, so at the end of the day, Iran is one of those countries that we will always be told that it's a threat. Because if you're talking about a nuclear enrichment, and Iran, as we understand, they only managed to enrich about 60% of their uranium. So who then make a decision as to who should have a nuclear weapon and who shouldn't? Because we understand that Israel has been having nuclear weapons ever since. I think Israel, I don't know whether they happen to be the fifth country to have this particular technology at the end of the day. But who shared it with them? It's the West.
It's the West.
So we should also ask ourselves, because if you look at the time of Eisenhower did not support the establishment of Israel. in the first place, when the Zionist movement was trying to establish Israel. The same thing as well, the British did.
I want to ask you a question regarding that. But some historians are saying there was a proposal to bring the Zionists to Africa. Is that true?
The proposal was that when in the year 1897, there's a gentleman named Theodor Herzl who wrote a book called Judenstadt. And Herzl was an Austrian Jew who ended up working in France as a journalist. And when he went there, he realized that the mistreatment of Jews is also happening there, because Jews were not recognized in Europe. The Jews and the Gypsies, they were not recognized. So when he wrote that book, the Zionist movement came together in the year 1898 to discuss about this particular book. That's when they made a decision that they need the land of their own, which is now Palestine today. And we understand that Palestine got its name by the Romans in the year 139 or 38. So at the end of the day, the Zionist movement, when they made the decision that they're going to occupy that particular land, because even when the British took over, they were already moving there, and the British will try to limit the amount that will be flocking into about 12 or 13,000 per year. But then they said, look, do not take this land. We are proposing Argentina or Uganda. So they propose. So, but then the Zionists said there cannot be a Jew state without Jerusalem. So that's what actually made them to say that we are going to occupy that particular land.
Okay, let me ask you why Iran managed to be stable and building its capacity regardless of the neighbors being hit here and there. How did it survive for so long?
You cannot talk about Iran without talking about the Persian Empire.
Yeah.
So the Persians, just the same as you can't talk about Iraq without talking about the Babylonian Empire. So the Persians are tough people, very much tough. That's why when you look at the Shah, not the Shah, but the Ayatollah.
Yeah.
The Ayatollah, the first Ayatollah.
Ruhollah.
Ruhollah Khomeini. When he was already young, he was already being taught the whole Islamic fundamental and theory. And this is what he focused upon his entire life, because he even became a professor, and he started supporting young people that he would teach who were very much radical and fundamentalist. Because from the 50s and the 60s already, even when he was outside the country, he would always propagate and focus on the idea of establishing an Islamic state within Iran. That's why in the year 1964, when the Shah was ousted, this is what he focused upon by calling for a referendum, where of which they got a 98.2% of the votes to support that referendum at the end of the day, because his idea was already there. That's why, just as you mentioned, that even when the government was set up, he remained the supreme leader.
But it's very difficult to understand.
It's very difficult.
With all
these setups that they have, your constitution, constitutional assembly, your assembly of experts,
there's always a layer on top of another layer.
There's always a layer on top of another layer.
Yeah.
So at the end of the day, it's almost like having your magistrate court making decision all the way, and then still needs to be to be assessed by the persecutor general, and then it needs to go to the high court, and then the Supreme Court will make a decision. When the Supreme Court makes a decision, then it goes to the supreme leader now. At the end of the day, their whole structure is difficult of governing. So what I'm saying is this. if the Ayatollah has to be removed, and there needs to be a regime change, there also need to be a regime change in Israel as well, because the ideology of Netanyahu will also not go away. Just the same as the ideology of the supreme leader will also not go away, because you cannot remove, uproot one tree and then allow the other one to stand at the end of the day. But this is how, I think what we need to ask ourselves, how did Israel manage to win the world over to their side?
That is a question. It's like you read my mind. How can you convince Americans? Even Ukraine failed to do that.
Exactly.
It's a big question.
That's a big question, because even when Israel became a country, and declared that they're going to be a country, and people have to vote in the UN Council, the League of Nations have to vote. You must remember that even though Balfour declared that Britain will look upon England, upon the establishment of Israel with a favorable eye, what they call the Balfour Declaration. Yeah. You must remember that England did not vote, but they abstained.
Yeah.
So at the end of the day, how were they able to convince the world to take their side? Because even when you look at America right now, which is a superpower, the influence of Israel, of the Israelites, it's very, 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 very strong. Because if you look at, let's look at some of our people, like Kanye West, what his comment got him to lose so much. We remember there was a basketball player by the name of Kyrie Irving as well, who shared a documentary about black Jews.
Yeah.
He was supposed to return to remove it and apologize, otherwise he was going to play for the NBA.
Serious?
Dwayne Howard as well. Howard said that he would stand with Palestine. He was told to remove it quickly, or otherwise he will lose all his endorsement. So they have this power at the end of the day. They control the whole industry, your music industry, your sports industry, and everything else at the end of the day. That at the end of the day, whether America doesn't want to support them or either way, they are forced to support them because of how there are so many Jews that are involved in the American economy at the end of the day. So we should look at it from that perspective.
Maybe the other question I have also, how come Donald Trump did not agree with the intelligence community advice? Even the director of intelligence said there is no nuclear weapons in Iraq. How is your understanding with American, I don't know how to say constitution, but American process on declaring war? Because it's a bit confusing to me, because the other time when Bush went to Iraq, I think he got the endorsement of the Congress. But this thing, how are these things happening? It's just an operation or it's war?
If you look at Bush before when he became a president, they will always say that Saddam Hussein doesn't hold no threat.
Yeah.
Until Netanyahu kept propagating the idea that if Saddam is removed, there will be peace in the Middle East. Only then that you hear now the word, the Twin Tower was struck down, and then now you hear the word weapons of mass destruction. And the word was repeated so much that at the end of the day, the people have no other way but that's how to support it at the end of the day. Because in order to go to war, it needed to be approved. So U.S. has no intention in going into the Middle East. But Netanyahu has an idea that he needs to weaken Iraq. He needs to weaken Iran at the end of the day. Because if you look at where Iran is right now, it's the same thing that they told us that Gaddafi was killing his own people.
Yeah.
So it's always this this propagated lie. Like Gaddafi even says that, look, the UN inspectors might can come in and see the type of weapons that I have. The same that Saddam did. Even the Iranian, how many times has he been in Iran? But how many times have they been in Israel?
Yeah.
So that they can have a proper report also from Israel's side at the end of the day.
Mm.
So the whole world, it's all about this misinformation. Mm. If you look at the art of war, it's all about deception.
It's lies.
Yeah. So it's all about deception.
Okay. We have, you're going to tell me your name after the conversation. We have 5 minutes.
Okay.
Maybe let us look at the possibilities, because when Iran got down, the Eastern Bloc, I don't want to say the Eastern Bloc, but to look at China, Russia, they're also going to lose so much, because Iran is so very important in terms of trade, and also their contribution to the whole GDP of BRICS, if I have to say. What are some of the possibilities, or what are some of the scenarios that maybe you think would happen?
Because you ask, would there be a World War III? I don't think there will be World War III, because the world is the blocks that actually supports Iran has so much to lose right now. Russia is focused on its war with Ukraine right now.
Yeah,
that's where they are pushing all their resources. That's why the Syrian rebels were able to push Bashar out, because
Assad
out, because Russia was actually helping them with their airplanes to bomb the rebels. Mm-hmm. They are now focusing their resources there now. So at the end of the day, right now, if you look at Putin's speech yesterday, he says that, look, it's difficult for us to assist Iran, especially when they not ask for it. So in other words, he's also washing his hand. That, look, you see, it's an ally. So at the end of the day, he's also washing his hands, and he's saying that he cannot get involved without telling you that he cannot get involved, because he's focused. If you look at his focus on his country, saving his country and making sure that the economy survives, and also he defeats Ukraine. Mm. The same thing as well, China right now. China does not want to go in a direct war, because they are focusing on being an economical power. Mm. Once you're an economical power and then you topple the United States, then you're at a good position where you can now also have your order, just like as the U.S. have their own agenda of their own world order. Now you can also propagate your own world order at the same time,
Kim Jong-un apparently is not invited to the party. He's very angry. People are making a lot of memes. North Korean leader.
North Korea needs help itself at the end of the day.
Okay, in terms of?
It wants to be invited, but I think it's a country that also relies upon the help of China and Russia as well, as far as survival is concerned, in any conflict. It's not a bigger power for them to actually have some sort of influence right now, as far as that is concerned.
Okay.
But one thing also that we need to look at, as time is running out.
Yeah.
When you look at also Iran.
Yeah.
We must understand that Iran is a standalone country, because it does not have support of other Arabic countries. Even though they are Muslim, we must understand that Iran is a Sunni Muslim country, because Sunnis are the majority. Not Sunni, but Shiite. Shiite, because we must understand the history of the division that brings the Sunnis and the Shiite. Because Shiites and Sunni do not get along because of their original dispute from Maybach.
Yeah.
So it's difficult for them to get support, because the Saudi Arabians and other countries, they are basically also enhancing Israel to win as far as that is concerned, as far as this war is concerned, because they are not supporting Iran. And it's difficult that, and I doubt that they will ever actually support Iran, even their own Muslim countries.
So Iran is going down.
From the look of things, Iran's biggest supporter was Russia and China. They are outside of the Middle East. Mm-hmm. It's not within the Middle East.
Mm-hmm.
Except now the Houthis in Yemen, and
Hezbollah.
Yeah, and Hezbollah. Mm-hmm. But Hezbollah, we must understand, he was the one who's feeding them. They can't do anything to advocate for him.
Mm-hmm. Okay, because of time, who am I speaking to? And we would like to invite you one day also to our show.
You're speaking to Abner.
Abner who?
Abner Nilonga.
Okay. Thank you very much, Abner Nilonga, for your content-based contribution, and thank you for your time.
Thank you. Take care.
All right. Yes. We are talking about the history of war. We are talking about what are the possibilities, what will happen, where the world is. And we were joined by Abner Nilonga, and he clarified everything. He gave us the content of history. And that is what is very important, because when you understand history, it's very good. It's very easy for you to advise a person about the future, because history is not only about the past, but it's a continuation of human activities. And those who read history, you understand economics, politics, and most importantly, you understand the nature of human mind, because those events are influenced by the decisions made by human beings. You understand how people think and also how they make decisions, particularly those regarding, you know, national interest. Yes, today we were talking about the Middle East, talking about U.S. intervention in Iran war. And we were just touching a little bit about the history and the understanding of Iranian people, what will happen, what are some of the possibilities. Are we going to have a diplomatic, you know, diplomatic solutions, or is going to be the end of the end of the war? So yeah, thank you very much for listening, and we're going to leave you in the good hands of our colleagues, and until next time, see you tomorrow, and continue enjoying your Sunday.
Got me, we got something everybody else can see. Me, I got you, we got a good thing, honey, you know